Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to the Friday Sports.
Start spreading the news.
Oh, that went really quick. Number two is here.
Frank is in the house.
Yeah. All right, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us. sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so you can look for one popping up there tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. You can hunt me down on Twitter at Burke Time, and sadly, we don't have Stu on there yet. We're still working on that, but you know, one of these days we might get that done. So
maybe I'll hop aboard one time.
All right. Well, you know, Stu, I saw today that I'm very happy to see that the Yankees are much smarter than anybody else who reports on the Yankees. I don't know if you saw this one. They signed DJ LeMahieu today, 2 years, $24 million. I could actually say former Cub DJ LeMahieu if I would like
yes,
to. He did start
correct.
His career. You know, it was so weird because when they signed Troy Tulowitzki, I couldn't figure out where all the Tulowitzki love came from because, you know, we were talking about a guy who didn't play at all last year. You know, he just turned 34 in October, and, you know, he only played 66 games in 2017. And, you know, his skills have greatly declined, but yet everybody was acting like he was going to be the Yankee starting shortstop with Gregorius hurt. And I was like, nah, they're going to do something. So I'm assuming LeMahieu gets the job at second and they move Gleyber Torres over to short. You think that's the way they're going?
That sounds like certainly is the way it's going. It's surprising, though, that there was so much interest in Tulikowski because, as you mentioned, he didn't play at all last year, right? Or did he play a couple of games?
No, didn't play a game.
And the Cubs are also in the hunt for him. So maybe the word is out among the various GMs that he was healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, well, you know, he had a showcase, as they call it now, and I guess 11 or 12 teams attended. You know, I am maybe wondering if there's a chance he'll move across to first base because, you know, the Yankees, you know, right now the scheduled starter at first base is Luke Voit. So I could see maybe him getting some time there. But with his injury history, I just can't see him being an everyday shortstop anymore.
No. And has he played first before?
I don't think so, but obviously, you know, he's got how many months now to figure it out? What, 3, 4?
Yeah. I'm sure he could probably handle it. But that would be a strange move by the Yankees if they hired him and then moved him to first base.
Well, you know of another great shortstop that moved over to first base towards the end of his career.
Well, it was a lot. He played there for many years. That's true. It wasn't just toward the end of his career. I would say at least 8 or 9 years at first base for Ernie Banks.
Yeah, we're talking about Ernie Banks, you know, in case anybody is kind of wondering there. So, I like the LeMahieu signing probably a lot more than everybody else did because immediately they jumped on the Coors Field thing. And oddly, there is a gigantic split in his batting average. He hit .317 at Coors Field last year and only .229 on the road. But somehow, and I don't know how this happens when you play in Coors Field, he hit more home runs on the road. He hit 11 homers on the road and only 4 at home.
Yeah,
so
that's an odd statistic, right? That's quite odd.
I don't get that one at all.
Yeah, he had some great years for them, and of course, when he played for the Cubs, they didn't give him too much of a chance. But he never impressed anybody as being a great hitter when he played for Chicago for a year or two.
Yeah, well, he only had 37 whopping games with the Cubs, so it's not like they got a big look at him.
Yeah.
But you know, in Colorado, well, a couple All-Star appearances, won 3 Gold Gloves, and picked up a batting title.
Although he did seem to taper off a bit last year, though, I believe he did, well, as you mentioned, he didn't do too well on the road in terms of the batting average, but I don't think he was as good last year as he had been in the previous years with Colorado.
Yeah, no, he had some injury issues as well. He was limited to 128 games, and that's his lowest total since 2013. So he's normally out there every day. So last year he was a little nicked up, but, you know, he's kind of got a natural right field type of swing. And if you're going to succeed in Yankee Stadium, I mean, that's a super short porch. I think he's going to have a fantastic success.
Yeah, that should be a good addition for them. And age-wise, is he in the same general age as Tulikowski, 34 or so?
No, he's actually only 30. He'll turn 31 in July.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he seems like he's been around a long time, and so he must have started pretty young.
Yeah, he started. He made his major league debut with the Cubs at just 22 years old. So,
well, that could be a good deal for the Yankees if he could show that he could hit in the American League as well as he did with Colorado in the National League.
All right, now here you know since you're the big Cubs fan. I'll give you a hint. They sent DJ LeMahieu and Tyler Colvin to the Rockies. Who'd they get in return?
No bloody clue. I'm sure it was a big name, though.
Well, they got a minor leaguer who I don't ever think made it to the majors by the name of Casey Weathers. That wasn't the name I was looking for. What do you remember about Ian Stewart's tour of duty with the Cubs?
Didn't they sign him to a big deal and he was hurt and never played? He played for them? If he did play, he was pretty ineffective.
I can tell you he played 55 games in 2012, hit 201 with 5 homers.
Oh, that's deserving of a multi-year contract, isn't it, by today's standards?
Yes. Yeah, you know, I vaguely remember, I think they signed him to like a one-year $10 million deal back then. And, yeah, it was just, I don't know what the heck they were doing, so...
Wasn't he the player who badmouthed the Cubs after he left them, or am I thinking of somebody else?
Actually, I think he got sent to the minors by the Cubs in 2012, and I believe that's when the badmouthing issue started.
Right.
So humorously, when they sent him down, I don't think he ended up playing again in 2012. But they actually brought him back in 2013, and he played 67 games at AAA, hit .171. So obviously his skills were quite diminished by the time the Cubs got around to bringing him in. But, you know, they were rebuilding, and, you know, he wasn't going to do anything there anyway. So,
well, that was a deal that was one-sided against the Cubs for sure. I could think
one
or two that were worse than that, though, right? We could think of a couple of worse deals than that one.
That was a definitely not a there.
Yeah, that took place a couple years before the resurgence.
Yeah. So, and then we did have, you know, Dan and I were talking yesterday when, the Brewers picked up Yasmani Grandal. We kind of figured the Dodgers were going to be in the market for a catcher. And I had heard all day how they were really close to acquiring JT Realmuto, who the Marlins, you basically kind of have to get rid of because he just doesn't want to be there anymore. But I'm guessing something must have fell through because the Dodgers ended up shipping off 2 minor leaguers. They traded a shortstop by the name of Ronnie Brito, who I believe is pretty highly rated, and then a right-handed pitcher named Andrew, I'm going to go with Sopko, to the Toronto Blue Jays to bring Russell Martin back to Los Angeles. So it looks like he's going to be their catching tandem with Russell Martin and Austin Barnes.
Yeah, Russell Martin has had some good years, although I don't think he's been very consistent in his career. He's had good years, and he's had some ones that have been pretty bad as well.
Yeah, he really scuffled last year. Only played 90 games, hit .194. Even in 2017, he only played 91 games and hit .221. So he's really been struggling with some injury issues. But he's not looking to come in full time here. You know, they're just looking. I think they're kind of looking for him to maybe tutor Austin Barnes a little bit.
I know
Toronto sent some cash along in this deal, but Martin, he's still carrying a $20 million payday for this year, but this is the last year of his deal, so it's just a one-year move for the Dodgers.
It's still a surprising move by the Dodgers because everybody has been talking about the possibility of them getting Real Muto. So what happened? Did they find out something that they didn't like about him, or?
Yeah, everything I keep reading is the Marlins are asking for a lot. Now, nobody's actually said what a lot is, but apparently they're looking for one major league player and then top prospects. So, you're going to have to be a certain type of team to be able to make that move.
Yeah, I wonder if he'll wind up playing for them again this year.
Yeah, because, I know the report I read yesterday said there were six teams in the mix, but, the only team name I heard were the Dodgers, the Astros, and the Braves. I didn't hear who the other three teams were. So, allegedly, there's six teams, and I only know three of them.
Yeah, well, a couple of top contenders in that list, though.
Yeah, I thought he would have been a good fit for L.A., but, I know they like Austin Barnes, and he is a very good, he's a really good pitch handler and a defensive catcher. And I did just remember the holdup with the Dodgers-Marlins deal is the Marlins want Cody Bellinger as part of the pack over, and the Dodgers are unwilling to include Bellinger in that trade.
Yeah, you really can't blame them for that. They could probably do with a lesser catcher than Real Muto.
So, yeah, with the offense they have, they might be able to get by with Barnes as a defensive specialist who, maybe he hits .250, but if he's catching a great game and he's throwing out base runners, I think you can live with that.
I'm sure they would be happy if he wanted hitting that much, although I have my doubts that he'll hit that .250.
Well, let me see if I can get some numbers on him here. I know he's never had a chance to play full time. He has a career .240 hitter, so maybe if they get that out of him, and like I said, if he plays, how hard it is to find a good defensive catcher.
Right.
They still have guys, I know Chris Stewart is hanging around, and so is Chris Herman, because these guys can play defense. And Jeff Mathis, who I don't think has hit more than .220 in his career, but, he's a fantastic pitch handler and defensive catcher, so he always gets jobs.
Yeah, it's amazing how some of these catchers can hang on in the majors despite a subpar batting average. But I guess the position is so difficult and so specialized that if you can hit .195 and are good at behind the plate, that you might be able to have a lifetime job in the majors.
Yeah, I guess to be fair, this may not, just adding Martin may not end the Dodgers' pursuit of Real Muto, because Barnes could always be included in that deal, because Miami would need a catcher in return. So it's possible this could be a move just to lead to another, the next move here, and they're just looking at Martin as backup fodder for Real Muto if they bring him in. So,
yeah.
You just never know.
It's very difficult for the Marlins to compete at the level, because their attendance is so poor that it's economically very, very hard for them to find deals that would suit them.
Yeah, but at this point, they got to give fans something to show up to now. I mean, you know, they're ripping this all down. I mean, you know, you're only going to get so many people to show up to watch JP Realmuto and Starlin Castro.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'd pay money to see Starlin anytime. Poor Castro.
Oh, yeah.
The Cubs finally got to be – and Castro's with the Cubs when before they got good, and then with the Yankees when they were starting to be competitive, and now he's with Marlins.
Yeah, hasn't had the best luck, you know, with teams, but, you know, just kind of, you know, he's had a really nice, solid career. So
yes, he has. And he seems to have played better since they switched him to second base.
Yeah, much better fit for his defensive skills. Getting himself over to second base, that was a big positive for his career, so to speak. So.
Yeah, it took a long time for the Cubs to finally come to that decision after many years of ineptitude at shortstop.
Yeah. A lot of it, too, was the fact that they, you know, what other choice did they have?
Yeah,
you know, there was
much.
There was no in the pipeline, so.
Right.
You know, you just kind of got to go with what you got.
Yeah, I'm sure that he's not too happy playing for a team that's not a contender, but as long as he catches his paychecks on a regular basis, I guess he can't be too unhappy.
Yeah, you know, and you do wonder, you know, I mean, there may be a contender who comes looking for him, you know, at trade deadline this year. If somebody needs a second baseman, you know, there's always the chance that, you know, he could be, you know, the next Marlin shipped off for prospects. So
yeah, that probably wouldn't, if that happened, though, that wouldn't happen until July or August, most likely.
Yeah. You know, we would definitely have to wait on that. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, anything like that happen. But, I heard an interesting question that I kind of wanted to pose to you here. You know, we're going through all this Bryce Harper, Manny Machado BS, and I heard today that Harper's contract with if the Nationals make an offer, is going to start between 10 and 12 years and $350 million. You know, Machado probably isn't going to get to that number, but there's a chance he's going to get close to $30 million a season. Now, Mookie Betts was just awarded $20 million in arbitration. You know, he heads to the free agent market next season. He'll be the next 26-year-old free agent. He just won his first MVP. He picked up a batting title last year, hit 32 home runs, drove in 80 RBIs, and stole 80 bases, along with being a Gold Glove winner. Does his contract beat theirs next year when he hits the market?
I'd have to say yes. I would have to say yes, based upon, especially looking at Harper's stats. I mean, is Harper actually worth that kind of money?
You know, I honestly think that he's worth it in ticket sales because, you know, people are going to buy tickets to see Bryce Harper play. I wasn't thrilled with his numbers last year. I know he had a much better second half than first half, but I wasn't super excited about it. I mean, here he ended up at 249 with 34 home runs and 100 RBIs. To be fair, he did walk 130 times, so, you know, it's clear, you know, he needs some type of protection in the lineup. But, you know, he's a career 279 hitter. He had that one monster MVP season, and I guess, you know, is that what teams are paying for?
It's possible, and I think he'll bounce back. I think he's skilled enough to at least bounce back to the 270, 280 mark next season, which is really what a team should expect from a guy with his talent. I don't know what happened to him the first half of the year, but as you pointed out, he certainly turned it around a little bit last season and wound up with fairly decent stats. But 249 is not good enough for someone who wants to get what he's worth, the kind of money they want,
yeah,
that they want to pay him.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember, you know, some of the first half, and you know, there was, I think, a lot of frustration on his part because, you know, there was no reason to pitch to him. So, you know, I mean, there were, you know, teams were just kind of working around him, and, you know, I think he got into the habit of chasing bad pitches. So
yeah, that'll do it.
You know, that'll kill you.
Would you be surprised if he re-signed with Washington?
No. I actually think that's where he's going. When, you know, I had to make my pick of where he was going to end up, I honestly think he'll end up back at Washington.
Yeah,
well, here's an interesting comparison for you. The first half, he hit .214. The second half, he hit .300.
Yeah, that's a big turnaround.
Yeah, he made, you know, whatever changes he made in the second half worked out. So I still don't think he's worth $30 or $35 million a year, but I don't think anybody's worth that kind of money, no matter who you are. So
yeah, that the amount of money that they pay these major leaguers now is really obscene. Look what Grandel's getting for their one-year deal with the Brewers.
Well, yeah, he got basically the qualifying offer. You know, the qualifying offer was just about that. So, you know, but, you know, it's a good move for Milwaukee. You know, there aren't a lot of, you know, 20-plus home catchers out there. And, you know, they managed to land one. Or, you know, Grandal's case, if, you know, he stays healthy, 25 home runs.
Yeah, I'm sure these contracts are not readily available, but I'm wondering if these guys actually get that money up front for 1 year, or else they're smart enough to defer it, maybe get paid for 10 or 15 years on a prorated basis, which would help them enormously in terms of income tax.
Yeah, I know, oddly, the discussion with the Nationals and Bryce Harper was how much deferred money was going to be in his contract. You know, that's part of the deal going on there because, you know, they deferred a lot of Max Scherzer's money. So,
right.
You know, that's right. Kind of been their move as of late.
And really it would make sense for someone getting that kind of money to have it deferred. And it might help the club out too.
Yeah. You know, that's always a big, you know, big plus there for a club. But here you go. I had to chase this down. Last year, there was one catcher who hit over 25 home runs. That was Sal Perez, who hit 27. Evan Gattis did hit 25, but he spent the majority of his time as a DH. And then there were four other guys who hit 20 home runs. Grandal ended up at 24. Riamuto had 21, and then Yadier had 20, along with Mike Zunino, who ended up at 20. You figure if Gary Sanchez is healthy, he's in this group as well.
Sure.
So, yeah, you know, power-hitting catchers are kind of few and far between. So that's, you know, that's a good ad for Milwaukee, I think.
It is. That is. And it's such a difficult position. You know, out of all the positions in the Major League lineup, I would say that's the most difficult, wouldn't you? Well, of course, you being a former catcher, you would probably have to agree with that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, imagine, you know, and especially with, you know, the way the schedule sets up, you know, these teams play countless days in a row in, you know, the dog days of July and August, and you know these guys are out there wearing that gear for 3+ hours. It's a big deal. It really is.
Yeah, you have to marvel at some of these longevity of some of these great catchers like Yogi Berra, for example, and currently the one that gives me the most respect is Yadi Molina. I mean, look how many games he's caught over the years, and his average is always good, and the guy is an unbelievable ball player.
So yeah, he's definitely a first ballot type Hall of Famer guy. I think
I don't think
there's any doubt when finally packs it in that he goes first ballot. So
him and Contreras, definitely both of them first ballot Hall of Famers, right?
Yeah, well, you know, for 2 years ago, Contreras looked like he was on that track. Last year, not so much.
Especially the last half of the season, right? What happened?
I wonder if maybe he ran out of gas.
Yeah, it. They say that it's wear and tear in the position, but if that's the case, then why do some of these other players are consistently good throughout the season?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, how long now have we heard the Giants talk about moving Buster Posey? You know, they, you know, he's catching too much. They got to find a, you know, he's got to play some more different position. But yet every year he catches 120, 130 games.
Yeah, I'm sure he wouldn't have a problem at first base. And I mean,
no, you know,
that eventually.
You know, you do wonder how that works out.
Yeah.
But I know they had a, you know, whole bunch of guys picking up their arbitration paychecks today. You know, Jose Abreu, Jacob DeGrom, Chris Davis from the A's, not the other Chris Davis. Francisco Lindor got a first-year arbitration deal just under Chris Bryant's record deal of last year. He got 10.55 in arbitration. Marcelo Zuna, you know, worked it out with the Cardinals. We had a Yasiel Puig, Zach Wheeler, Michael Conforto, and then Steven Matz, and then Kevin Gausman settled with the Braves, Aaron Nola with the Phillies, and a couple of Brewers, Travis Shaw and Zach Davies. So we're to that point now where we're going to kind of see who's where and who's making what, and we'll have to see. And then I believe I saw Xander Bogaerts and Jackie Bradley also worked it out with the Red Sox. So, you know, teams will be finalizing what's going on, and we should see some more guys signed here. There's been a few more signings lately, so we should get, you know, some stuff going.
You'd like to think so. Are any Cubs eligible for arbitration this season?
Well, you know, Bryant still is. You know, this is year, was this year one or year two? So he definitely still, I can, it'll take me a minute to hunt that down, but I should be able to get it. Oddly, I actually, as weird as it sounds, I believe Addison Russell is arbitration eligible. I think off the top of my head, I don't know how they handle that, but I believe he is actually eligible for it. So,
well, he may have certainly botched a decent payday with his off-field antics.
Yeah. All right, let's see what I got here. All right, oh, there's actually a quite a list here. You ready? We got Kyle Hendricks, Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, Kyle Schwarber, Addison Russell, Mike Montgomery, and Carl Edwards Jr.
Well, the Cubs are going to have their hands full, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know they have some projected salary totals. Like they put a Hendricks just over $7 million, Brian just under $13 million, Baez at 5.2, Schwarber at about 3.4, Russell at 2.7, and then of course that'll be adjusted for the suspension. Mike Montgomery at 2.4, and then Carl Edwards at 1.4. So that's what they're projected to make approximate arbitration wise.
Yeah, and are they worth it? Are they all worth that?
Yeah, well, you know, I think obviously Kyle Hendricks is, you know, $7 million for a starter
right.
Like that, or 7.5. That's not bad. You know, Javi at 5.2. That's a good deal for a player like him. Obviously, Bryant's got to prove his worth now.
After his down year last year, of course, the shoulder injury was instrumental in his stats going so far down last season. You would hope.
But yeah, I don't know if I'd be willing to pay Schwarber $3.39 million with the way he's played, but you know, I guess you know in today's game that's not bad money. So
yeah, I think
we'll see how that all works out. But you know, and then they do have some guys like next year. Contreras, Alberto Almora, and Ian Happ start the arbitration process. So.
Well, I don't look for too much in terms of Happ being with the Cubs next season.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to wonder. I mean, if they're going to make a big move, which I honestly don't think they're going to at this point, I believe that's all kind of passed by. You know, the first move they're going to make is they've got a clear spot. So, you know, either
right.
Hop has to go or Schwarber has to go, or, You know, so somebody's got to go to open up room for somebody to play.
Yeah, I don't know. As I discuss with you in my pessimistic emails, I'm wondering if the glory years are quickly over for the Cubs.
Yeah, well, you know, sadly they might be. I mean, like, I don't have a problem with their everyday lineup. I mean, it's a really good, really solid lineup. And even the rotation isn't bad, but, you know, like, Quintana's been a disappointment, and Darvish was just flat-out embarrassing last year, even when he was healthy. So they're going to have to work that out. But, man, this bullpen drives me nuts. And I just don't understand what the hell they're thinking. Strop is set up as the closer because Morrow's hurt, and then the two main setup guys are Edwards and Cishek. That's not a World Series winning bullpen. I'm sorry.
By any stretch of the imagination, that's for sure.
I'm not saying they have to go out and, you know, give in to, you know, Craig Kimbrell's demands because I know he wants 5 years and, you know, multiple millions of dollars. They don't need that. They just need a complement to Morrow so they can kind of go with, you know, both guys. I mean, you know, you need a two-closer system, basically. And, you know, because Strope is a fantastic setup guy. And, you know, just let him, you know, let him work. And, you know, I mean, I know Cody Allen had a down year with the Indians, but I'm guessing you could get him probably relatively cheap in today's game. You know, Brad Boxberger was a solid guy, you know, closing experience with the Diamondbacks. He was decent last year. You know, even if they were to just, you know, add a name like that where they could kind of go, hey, you know, we're going to pair him up this way and, you know, work him out like this. And then, you know, Morrow could be the main guy when he's healthy. But when he's in trouble, you could turn to one of these guys and say, okay, this guy's going to close while Morrow's out. Then you could leave, you know, Romo as the main setup guy or Strope as the main setup guy. Sorry, because, you know, with the exception of last year, he's had zero success as a closer.
No, he has not done the job as a closer. And some pitchers are like that. They can be great setup men, but when it comes to getting the job done as a closer, they just can't do it.
But, yeah, you know, I think they, you know, of all the ads they need to make, and I know, you know, the fans want to see a big move. I mean, I understand that. You want your team to, you know, get out there and bring in the, you know, the top guys, even though that doesn't always work out. I mean, you know, you can look at that Jason Hayward contract and be like, yeah, was that worth it? But, yeah, I mean, you know, you're looking at the bullpen. I mentioned the three guys. The rest of the bullpen is, you know, Montgomery's been solid for them. But then it's Brandon Kitzler, Brian Dunsing. They have Alec Mills projected to make the team, and Tyler Chatwood as the long reliever. How you feel about that, buddy?
Not very optimistic, to tell you the truth. And you know, Kitzler was horrible with the Cubs, although he's had some good stats and with other teams throughout his career. And Chatwood, well, one thing a good relief pitcher has to do, and he can't do that. That's a throw strikes.
You know, and then, yeah, you know, down at the farm, you know, I am a little surprised that they have Randy Rosario penciled in at AAA instead of in that spot for Alec Mills, because I thought he did a nice job for them last year coming out of the pen.
For the most part,
but,
he did.
Yeah, other than that, there's not a ton of stuff down on the farm that's going to come up and help this team. So
yeah, and we know what Dunsing has done the last couple of years. He had one good year, which he projected into a nice income, but he certainly has not looked very, very good the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and, you know, you hope he bounces back. You know, he had a lot of injuries last year. So, you know, you just maybe, you know, he can straighten himself out. And, you know, who knows, maybe a new pitching coach gets Chatwood righted and he can be a productive guy. But, yeah, it's, you know, that's my biggest fear when I look at this team is, you know, this bullpen is a joke.
they certainly have their work cut out for them if they want to compete next season. And it could very well be the NL Central could have the strongest overall five teams in the majors. I mean, when you look at their improving Pittsburgh team, and if Cincinnati ever gets some decent starting pitching, they have a powerful lineup, powerful starting lineup.
Yeah, well, you might have to fight with the NL East there. I mean, the top four teams there really made some big moves. I mean, the only thing that holds them down is obviously the Marlins are there, but both Washington, Philly, the Mets,
they all made really
positive moves. And I know the Braves didn't make a ton of moves, but I think Josh Donaldson is going to be a big add there. So
The Braves are a very young team. Don't forget the Braves are a young team, and I think they're just coming into their own now. So they don't have to make a lot of moves.
No, they do, and that's why they were one of the names that came up with Realmuto, because they have the prospects to make the deal. So
it'll be interesting to see if they can acquire him. Well, it might still happen.
But yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I mean, I know the Reds added a couple pitchers, and Kemp and Puig should help their offense. I'm not sure they're quite there, and I'm not buying Pittsburgh. I still think it's a three horse race. I am a little concerned with the Brewers. I don't think they can go into the regular season with Corey Spangenberg as their starting second baseman. I know they had some interest in LeMahieu, so you've got to wonder if maybe they'll go a different route. I know they had some talks with the Giants about Joe Panik, so maybe that happens. But, you've just got to kind of wonder, are they going to burn that bullpen out with their style of managing? It looked like the bullpen kind of ran out of gas in the playoffs. And, if you're only getting four or five innings out of your starters, that's a lot of innings for a bullpen to eat up.
That's their big concern for them, sure.
Yeah.
But they still look very solid to me. And I think the Cardinals, of course, have improved themselves, and they're going to be in the hunt, too. So it won't be easy.
Yeah, you look at the Brewers, and the names are fantastic in the bullpen, but the starters don't blow you away. I mean, it's Julius Chacin, Chase Anderson, Zach Davis, Brandon Woodruff, and they get Jimmy Nelson back. Now, remember, Brett Sutter is gone. He had Tommy John, so he's not pitching at all this year. So that's a big loss for them. He would have probably been the only left-handed starter. They're all right-handed in the rotation now. So, yeah, I just don't know if that's enough to carry a team. And then again, you wonder by August of September, what the hell that bullpen's going to have left.
The bullpen running in fumes at that time of the year. If what you say comes true in terms of the short outings for the starting pitching.
Yeah, well, that seemed to be their plan. Last year was four or five innings and we turn it over to the bullpen. I believe the Cardinals are actually more of a threat now with, you add Goldschmidt to that middle of the lineup, and, that's 290, 30, and 100, out of a guy that they didn't have that last year. If they get anything out of Dexter Fowler after the brutal year he had last year, boy, they're going to be dangerous.
If I had a pencil in number one team in the Central right now, I would pick St. Louis.
Yeah, you get Carlos Martinez back from injury, so he'll go back in the rotation. I don't know anybody who had Miles Mikolas getting like 17 wins last year. I mean, if it wasn't for, the year DeGrom had, he would have been a Cy Young contender. Flaherty is just 23. He looks like another St. Louis up-and-coming starter. Michael Wacha and Adam Wainwright should be solid enough at 4 and 5, but then they were smart enough to add Andrew Miller, because I know they want to break Jordan Hicks in as the closer, and it's great that he throws 100 and 105 and stuff, but he gets a little wild. So, Miller can rein those days in when he's kind of not feeling it or he's a little off. So I thought that was a fantastic move for them, and I actually wouldn't be surprised to see them add one more bullpen piece.
Right.
The only thing
that concerns me about Miller is that he seemed to have diminished a little bit because of his injuries that he had the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Will he be healthy?
Yeah, well, you know, remember, he was the first guy that really started eating up all the innings for the Indians the year they went to the World Series, and then he hasn't been healthy since. So
right.
You wonder
so you see
if
what
maybe
happens. You have to, that's what happens.
Yeah,
we're in
yeah you know, you get a full off season. Maybe he's healthy enough now to kind of, you know, knock things out. But, yeah, they have a really veteran bullpen. You know, I mean, they got guys with a lot of experience down there. I mean, Gregerson has closed. I think Brett Cecil has had some closing opportunities. I know they like Dominic Leone. There was a talk about making him the closer last year. Chase and Shreve had a lot of success with the Yankees, and then they got John Gant, who, you know, had worked, you know, is going to be the long reliever, was kind of one of the Braves prospects that they finally ran out of room for, so I had to ship him out because he was out of options. So, I think they're going to be tough. I really do.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I, as I say, right now I would pick them to be the number one team in the NL Central, closely followed by Milwaukee.
You know, and I know they want to move Jose Martinez because there's really not a spot for him. He's not a quality outfielder, and, you know, otherwise he's just going to sit behind Goldschmidt. But, yeah, you know, if they can pick, you know, if they make the right move there, I mean, that could be another big, big add for them. And, it just kind of gets worse.
Right, and they better hope they can win it this year because, as we all know, Goldschmidt is one and done probably for the Cardinals.
Yeah, you know, it kind of looks like that. I mean, you know, of course, then again, you know, if he goes out and he has a good year, you know, maybe he would consider returning.
It's always a possibility.
Well,
should be exciting in St. Louis for them this year. Yeah, I wish I could say the same for the Cubs.
Yeah, it's, you know, you gotta kind of wonder, you know, what you know Theo's doing. I mean, he made some fantastic draft picks, and I get that, you know, you get attached to your guys and you don't want to let them go because Mr. Fantasy accuses me of that in, you know, fantasy sports, that I get attached to the guys, I don't want to let them go. But, yeah, you know, you've got to make those tough decisions. I mean, you got to improve your team, and I just don't know if the Cubs have this offseason.
Yeah, they have done virtually nothing now. And consider their starting lineup, their starting pitching. It doesn't give me much confidence either. I mean, you got a couple of guys who are, 35, and these guys could lose it. You know, it's easy to lose it when you're up at 35 years old. And you got a guy coming back from a serious injury. And Hendricks, I don't know, he was okay, but not as consistent as I would like him to be. He's had some kind of rough outings too. So I'm not confident
in the... You know, he'll be okay. I mean, he's you know, the least of the worries in that rotation,
yes.
I think.
Yes, I agree with that. I think he's the number one. To me, I would give him the number one starting pitching for the Cubs, pitcher for the Cubs, although that's not going to happen, obviously. But that's what I would pen him in for myself.
So, but all right, I need to know this now as we got to change up here. Are you going to stay up to watch the Bulls take on the Golden State Warriors tonight?
Well, if I put a couple $100 on the Bulls losing by 20, I might do that, but no. I think I'll have to forego that pleasure. And I know they only lost by 12 or so to Portland, right, the other night. And,
yeah.
And it was competitive for a while, but I don't think I'm going to watch that game. At least to the very end,
yep.
I might look at it, maybe the first half a little bit.
Yeah, I did see the Warriors are favorite by 15.5. So.
Ah. Well, I think that would be a good bet if you took Golden State tonight. Although
yeah, you're going with the Warriors to cover?
I would go with the Warriors to cover tonight, although, as we also talked about, they certainly are not running away with the league this year like they have in years past.
Yeah, no, well, you know, I mean, you know how it is. It's kind of a copycat league, and you do wonder if all the games they've played with the playoffs and stuff is just finally kind of starting to catch up to some of them guys.
Yeah, the playoffs can run so long. I mean, it's like another season.
Yeah.
If you go deep into the playoffs.
You go to what now? You play till June now in the NBA?
Yeah, you go to June, mid-June.
So.
And that's got to wear on you after 3 or 4 or 5 years of doing the same playoff routine deep into the playoffs every year. That's gotta be a factor.
Yeah, you know, and even though they everybody says they are a little down, they are only a game and a half behind Denver for the number one seed in the West. So, you know, down for them is up for everybody else.
Yeah, but, of course, you're used to seeing them 7 or 8 games ahead at this stage of the season.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, they have 14 losses already, and I think that's the weird thing because we're used to seeing them in single digits until, you know, the All-Star break or even through the All-Star break.
Yeah. Don't forget, a couple of years ago, they only lost 9 games the whole season.
So, yeah, that's, you know, an odd thing. But, you know, while we're on the NBA, I'm interested to know, are you buying the Milwaukee Bucks? Because I heard some, you know, kind of hot and cold talk. Technically, they have the best record in the East by a half a game ahead of Toronto. But I haven't seen a lot of guys on their bandwagon. They think come playoff time, they're going to be successful. Are you on board there, or where do you have the Bucks in this mix?
I think they're one of the best two or three teams in the East. And that being said, though, they got some competition with Toronto, what, and Philadelphia. I bet a lot of people are considering Philadelphia the team to beat when it's all said and done.
Yeah, well, you know, it seems like most guys I hear. Even though Philly's in fifth and Boston, or Philly's in fourth and Boston is fifth overall, everybody seems to think they're the two teams. You know, Toronto's kind of being overlooked, and like Indiana, nobody ever mentions Indiana, and right now they have the third best record out there. So
yeah. Indiana, for some reason, seems to do very well during the regular season, but they don't seem to do very well in the playoffs.
So yeah, I just thought it was odd because. You know, obviously Milwaukee has one of the best players in the league in Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I actually said that right. Don't ask me how to spell it, though. You're on your own there.
No, I don't think I can do that. I don't think I can help you with that one.
But, yeah, and I'm a little surprised that, you know, I mean, because, like, there were guys writing them off. I don't remember if it was today or yesterday, but, like, not even as a contender. And I'm like, man, you know, as well as they've played, you've got to at least consider them as a threat to win the East, don't you?
Oh, I would think so. Just think if they had Parker with them right now, they'd be even better.
Yeah. You know, and I am looking here. It looks as though that the Bulls are only 9.5 games out of the final playoff spot in the East. So they can make that
That's
up, right?
Huh? Well, they can make that. They got some. Actually, the Bulls have some talent. They do have two or three decent players in the team, but they always seem to be in a state of flux. They're either getting hurt at the same time, or they can't. All these guys can't play together. Can't seem to sustain any kind of an effort in winning even 3 out of 5, which would be nice. Has that happened this year? Have they won 3 out of 5 games at one stretch of the season?
I don't think so. Yeah, it is a little odd in the NBA. Actually, right now, nobody has a winning streak longer than 3 games. On the other end, the Cavaliers have lost 11 in a row, and then the Bulls are behind them with 5 losses in a row. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Cavaliers, the Cavaliers remind me of when Jordan left the Bulls and retired temporarily.
Yeah.
At least that's what the Cavaliers remind me of, how they fared this year and how the Bulls fared when Jordan left for good the second time. I'm talking about.
You know, it's kind of like when Kevin Love gets back and proves he's healthy, it's time for him to go. Right? They just got to deal him.
They have to deal him.
I'm here. You go. The Bulls did win 3 out of 4 in December.
Wow.
Yeah. So they did. Looks like they did that. Yeah, just the one time. Otherwise, their best has been like 2 out of 3. But oddly, I don't believe, they haven't won more than two games in a row all season.
Wow, I'm telling you, I'm impressed with your acumen at the computer to come up with these facts so quickly.
I'm learning. Dan's teaching me how to be better on the computer.
Dan the man is a computer guru. I know that.
Yeah. He's the guy when it comes to that stuff. So I'm slowly but surely I'm figuring it all out. You know.
You know, it's a funny thing you mentioned about. You're talking about parity in the NBA, but you're talking about how parity is occurring right now. No one when you're losing much. But that was always a talk about the NHL, though, wasn't it? Parity in the NHL. But now, maybe it's happening in basketball as well.
Yeah, well, you know, sooner or later, you know, you teams end up catching up. But I do want to ask you one more Bulls question. I saw, I think it was a local writer. I know you buy the paper. I try to read everything online. And he was saying that Lauri Markkanen needs to be more selfish and, you know, kind of establish himself as the Bulls' number one player. Currently, he's their second leading scorer behind Zach LaVine. He is the leading rebounder on the team. Are you buying him as the centerpiece here to this Bulls rebuild?
I am. I definitely am. And I think that, although it hasn't been publicized too much, I think that elbow is still bothering him. That's a tough injury to come back from. And I think sometimes he's reluctant to shoot as much as he should. I think it's still twinging. There's some still pain there. And I think that they don't say much about it, but I'd like to see how he does when he's completely 100% healthy. But I don't think that's going to happen until next season, unless another injury occurs. But I do see him.
Obviously, unless the Bulls have some really bad luck, they're going to be able to add a really good young player next season, you know, in the draft. Because I believe they'll only be able to fall as low as, I think, is it five is as low as they can go when you're up top like that?
Yeah, well, you'd like to see him go number one or number two and maybe get someone from Duke that can help the team immediately, but we'll see how that happens.
So, yeah, that's, you know, always a fear is that you're the team that has the bad luck and end up sliding down. So
yeah, and we're always I have been suspicious for years about the lottery ball thing when the Bulls, especially when the Bulls wound up getting Derrick Rose. That caused me to raise my eyebrows a little bit. Let's put it that way.
When you go back and you look at it, there's been a lot of shady stuff. I mean, not just Rose ended up in Chicago, but LeBron James ends up going to Cleveland. Patrick Ewing ends up going to New York.
Yep.
You kind of start to look at that, and I get it. I mean, it makes as weird as it is to say, it makes sense for them to do that if they're doing it. But yeah, it's always going to be questioned, I think.
I think with justification, I mean, I don't see that in any other of the sports. I don't see that happening in hockey or football, even for that matter. But I do see it in basketball, and I think that it's a genuine question, a reasonable question to ask. As you pointed out, there's several instances that kind of look a little suspect to me.
Yeah, and you know, I think basketball, out of all the major sports, is always the most in question when it comes to tampering like that. You know, I mean, there was the issue with the referee, you know, and I know we've had some scandals, some point shaving scandals in college. I don't know if we've ever had one in the actual NBA, but you know, I know colleges went through that, and yeah, you wonder, you know, basketball just, it seems to be the sport that is, I guess we could say, most likely to have an issue like that. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it came out one day. I know there was a – back when the Knicks got Ewing, they said the way they set it up was they froze the Knicks card because that's when they pulled the cards out of the bin. so the commissioner would know which card was the Knicks as they were pulling them out of the jar.
Yeah, fortunately that was never proven one way or the other, though, that really happened.
But, yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, yeah, it's always just kind of fishy.
Right. Well, and you pointed out there have been a lot of, in terms of the point shaving scandals in college, that there's been a few instances of that I could remember, and this may be before your time, the incident, I think it was with Bevo Harris. Is that the name? I'm trying to remember now. It's been a long time. But he was involved in one of those scandals.
Yeah, I don't remember the name, but I kind of remember.
Yeah, that's way. Yeah, you probably weren't even born then. That's why you don't know.
No.
I keep forgetting that I've been around longer than you and whoever's listening.
Yeah.
Combined.
Yeah.
Thanks, combined.
Well, no, not true. I did find out that my 89-year-old uncle listens. So.
Oh.
He was talking to me about it yesterday. I was on the phone with him, and he does. He does tune in from time to time, so he's right there with you. You're not quite that old yet, are you?
Right. No, not quite. Not quite. I'm getting closer, though. But you'll have to check Bevel Francis. Check that out. I'll have to look at myself. Bevel Francis, B-E-V-O, see if he was involved in some kind of a point-shaving scandal. Maybe I have the name wrong, but after we get done talking, I'm going to check that out. Oh, by the way, while we've been talking, I want you to know one thing. I must mention this, that I just preheated the oven to 375.
Oh, all right. There you go.
You see?
Let's see. What do they have here on Bevel Francis? I use Dan's favorite search engine, which is Bing, because he gets points. But they does it look like they have anything here? He averaged 48.3 points a game, which is an NCAA record. So
yeah, that goes back quite a few years. I thought he was involved with it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's something else someone else I'm thinking about. But and sometimes there are rumors these guys are in so deep that they have to do the point shaving thing. Otherwise, Guido will be after him.
So yeah, there you know, there's always you know that kind of talk with that. So you do wonder.
Yeah, well, in terms of all the major sports, though, the easiest one to point shave would be basketball, right? I mean, without any question.
Yeah, you would think so. I guess if you were the quarterback in football, it would probably be pretty easy. You know, stuff like that, but...
Overall, you want to do it.
Yeah, you know, well, obviously, you know, baseball, we had the White Sox.
The White Sox scandal. And, of course, there was Pete Rose betting on games, but he always said that he'd bet on his team.
Yeah, you know, and obviously, you know, I don't think we know that I don't think there's a way to prove that, but,
no,
you know, you just got to kind of take the word on it, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just, right. You know, didn't Paul Hornung and Alex Karras get suspended for betting in the NFL?
I believe that's correct now that I think about it, yeah.
Oh, well, we'll have to look at this more a little bit next time. So the new news that covers you on the mouth is he's got to make sure. But the whole setup, Mr. Fantasy comes back Monday, calling him to all the fantasy football stuff and looking at the divisional round. While we're on the sports commentary.com, check out what's going on and hit the link over to the Facebook page. We've got a like series and look to the new blog over there tomorrow morning. Look to the Twitter feed, good morning, Sports Time Radio. And as always, good thanks to you, Flyman. But remember, the podcast is available for you to go listen to at